Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Joining us now is Martin Beans Ward, comedian, journalist, presenter and playwright. This Renaissance man has been tasked with picking out some of his favourite musical memories with us today. Martin, you're very welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Take us back to the very beginning, Martin. What's your earliest memories of music?
Growing up in my house, there was definitely a healthy mixture of different types of music. But I suppose the one that stands out, one particular singer that stands out, would be Marty Robbins. My father, being a massive fan, we had no choice but to listen to Marty Robbins. And I think in the beginning it was like, oh, old music. But then as a young lad, listening to the lyrics, I was drawn in, because Marty Robbins had this incredible gift of singing while also telling a story. And I love a good story. I really love a good story. And my imagination goes crazy when I hear a story in a song. So I'd be imagining all of these cowboys falling off horses and stampedes of buffalo killing them, you know. So Marty Robbins, and I think the song that stands out most for me is Big Iron.
And in all of that, you mentioned your dad singing Marty Robbins and that conjuring up these images. And of course, singing and music, it's such a rich part of the tradition of the travelling community. And did you see that across the family growing up, that music was kind of an anchor in all your lives?
Okay, so plot twist. My father can't sing at all. He's a really bad singer. But he'll give it welly anyway, you know. I didn't grow up in a house where we were talented singers, but I'll tell you what, we had a huge amount of confidence. So there was always music, there was always singing. And I think if the listeners haven't heard of Marty Robbins, give it a whirl.
Well, they're in for a treat now. Let's take a listen to Big Iron by Marty Robbins.
To the town of our free rode a stranger one fine day. Hardly spoke to folks around him, didn't have too much to say. No one dared to ask his business, no one dared to make a slip. The stranger there among them had a big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip.
And that was Big Iron by Marty Robbins, the first musical choice from our guest, Martin Beans Ward. You sound like you've always been something of an entertainer or joker. You're certainly known for that today. But was that the way growing up at home?
Not really. I was a moody teenager, to be honest with you. I suppose I grew up in a house where, you know, the only female in the house was my mother, and the rest of us were all lads, and it was always kind of banter filled, and you'd want a very thick skin growing up in my house. And I wouldn't change it for the world, because it was actually great fun, kind of getting the upper hand of, you know, on each other with the old slagging. And I grew up in a council estate as well, so it was almost like the currency. You know, it was to be able to have that banter and a bit of slagging. So I wouldn't say that I was the funniest person. I'm certainly not the funniest person in my town, and I'm just lucky enough, I suppose, to have had the opportunities to show some of my humour. Up to the old humour.
So there was currency in the one-liners and the banter. What about the music going into those teenage years? And the teenage years are, of course, transformative, and we're all figuring out our identity and what we stand for. How much of a deal was music to you in those teenage years versus, say, comedy and entertainment?
I mean, I went through some various stages. I went through, you know, the dance stage. I went through Alice DJ, Robert Miles. I also had the Dr. Dre phase, you know, the bit of rap. But I gave up on that because I wasn't able to sing along to it. And I had, I even had a Wolf Tones phase, to be totally honest with you. But I think the one that stands out most during those years, there are two actually, but in the earlier years, it would have been the Venga Boys. Yeah, for sure, the Venga Boys.
And, you know, take us back to those years, and I'm going to deeply empathise on this one, being of similar age now, Martin, but it's the era of mixtapes and combinations, isn't it?
It's the era of blocking off a part of the tape so that you could record the stuff on the radio. But I didn't say that on RT Radio. I'm not even sure if RT were cool enough to play the kind of music that I liked when I was younger. But yeah, it was definitely a time of the mixtapes. And yeah, it was a wild time. And the Venga Boys just stands out for me because I just have so many memories with especially Venga Bus. You know, the Venga Bus is coming.
And does it take you back, even singing it out loud there, you know, walking into a teenage disco in Tuam?
Well, there was no teenage disco in Tuam. We used to go to no-name clubs, which would be kind of like in the countryside. And yeah, it takes me back, all right, you know, dancing around. You know, I only had one move. It was called the airplane, which is my arms would just spread out and, you know, it was like I was taking off in flight. I looked like a big ESB pylon, you know, going through. And every so often I get a bit giddy and the feet might start moving a little bit faster, but that's about it. And of course, it wasn't about the dancing. It was making sure that everyone had a white top on so it looked cool under the UV lights. And I mean, that's the part that made the most difference to the discos. But for me, I have a memory of sharing a kiss with a French girl. I got the shift from a French girl and I was useless. and I wouldn't mind, but I obviously, you know, I didn't know till later that I was gay, but, well, truly gay, but I knew that it just wasn't hitting the mark.
And, chemistry check wasn't there, the sense of connection during the dreaded slow set, no.
Well, I was telling all the lads, I said, no, listen, the Tuam kiss is better than the French kiss, lads, since it's not worth going in there. But of course, I was the problem. I was definitely the problem, but I do remember that song, Venga Boys, well, and the Venga Bus.
Well, we hope you're going to pull out those airplane moves for us now in Galway as you listen to We Like to Party from the Venga Boys. And that was We Like to Party from the Venga Boys, the second musical choice from our guest Martin Beans Ward. So, Martin, coming out of those teenage years in the discos, you became more conscious of your local community, the travelling community, how to maybe serve in politics. Talk to us about that stage of your life.
Oh, wow. Okay, so we're going straight into the Wolftones phase, is it?
A little bit of Ogre Sinn Féin first there, perhaps,
a little bit of that, right, yeah. But also, so like, look, to be fair to the Wolftones, they're brilliant at singing and their music is fantastic. And again, it was the stories. It was like hearing these things. And I think I was just, I was conscious at that age of, I suppose, the discrimination that I was facing. Although definitely not as much as what was happening in a wider context. But I started to realise that there were certain injustices that the society, I suppose society was allowing to happen, and more specifically the government. So yeah, I thought I was going to change the world. I was like, that's it. Play me a little bit of the Black and Tans in the background. Martin Luther Beans is about to go into politics. And I lasted about a wet week. Because
and
of
that
course
that was as an equality officer for Ogre Sinn Féin, is that right?
Actually, it was an equality officer for the East Galway Cathaoirleach Cantar of Main Sinn Féin, I suppose, and it was part of the Cúige. But as I said, I did that for a year, and it felt a little bit like it was performative, and there wasn't actually anything happening, any changes, and there was no mobility towards making those changes. So, and I mean, like, life was speeding up for me at that stage then as well. But I came from that mindset, and I mean, like, I suppose a more appropriate song for that period of my life would have been nothing to do with republicanism or politics or that part of my brain that lasted a wet week. It was more to do with my own core identity. And it was a song called Georgie Boy by Rod Stewart, actually. And it was the first time I actually shed a tear listening to a song, because I suppose in around that time I was kind of struggling with who I was, my own identity, and not having other people in the town like me, or openly, I suppose, in the town like me. It didn't really give me a lot to aspire to be, or I suppose it didn't give me any confirmation that what I was going through was actually entirely normal, until I heard this song. And I heard this song sung by a straight man about his gay friend, Georgie. And it was just such a powerful song. And I'll always remember that. It was a pinnacle moment in my life, especially my younger years. And it kind of showed me that there's a world outside your little town, you know?
And can you remember the first time hearing it, what your emotion was?
I was crying. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I think when I listened to it first, it went straight into, because there's two parts to it. There's Georgie Boy Part One and Part Two, and Part Two is a lovely kind of Georgie Stay. It's kind of more melodic, but the story happened in Part One. So I remember listening to Part Two and I was like, oh no, I better listen to that now again. I'm feeling something here, and I went back to listen to it and listen to the words, and I think I listened to it over and over, maybe three or four times, and it was just like. Yeah, it was a weird moment. Music was definitely a vehicle towards kind of progression in my own soul, I suppose.
Because was it helping, I suppose, figure out your identity? This is age, what, 14, 15? You're growing up in Tuam. There's very little sex education in schools at that time.
So, there was no education around it, and there was definitely no normalisation. There was no way to experience, you know, life. I mean, like, being gay is not about sex. That's like one act of it. But the about being gay as your identity, as who you are, there was no talk of that. I mean, the only talk of that time was about AIDS and HIV. Like, it was Freddie Mercury. Usher, God help us, look what happened to him. You know, so it was terrifying,
a very
actually.
Fear-based impression at the time.
It was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying because, there was so much misinformation out there then as well, you know. There's like, you know, how do you get it? And sure, there was no conversations about it. And you're getting conversations secondhand from a fella down the road who wasn't gay, you know. Heard it from his father who was talking about Freddie Mercury. You know, so yeah, it was a difficult time. And hearing that song kind of, yeah, I suppose it brought me to where I needed to be at that time.
Well, let's take a listen to that song, The Killing of Georgie by Rod Stewart.
In these days of changing ways, so-called liberated days, a story comes to mind, a friend of mine. Georgie boy was gay, I guess, nothing more or nothing less, the kindest guy I ever knew.
And that was The Killing of Georgie by Rod Stewart, the third musical choice of our guest this morning, Martin Beans Ward. You were telling us about the importance, the meaning of that song for you back when you were 14, 15,
figuring out. Listen to it. Yeah. Listen to the lyrics, you know. And I think what you'll find is that there's a bit of a theme to the kind of music that I like. Well, I suppose Venga Boys being a little bit different, but it's the story. It's hearing the story and being brought along on this journey and being brought into this world of this person or this character or this part in time, and I just think that the lyrics of that were so poignant, so beautiful,
because it's helping you figure out your values.
Yeah.
What you want to stand for in the world without. And when did you come out? It was many years later, was it?
Yeah, it was 2016.
At what age?
What was that? Like 30s, early 30s there. Make me do the maths. for me, it was like, I spoke about this actually at the National Concert Orchestra on Thursday night. I didn't come out because I felt I needed to come out for me. I've always been quite private about my sexuality actually, and not that I was trying to hide it, but I just didn't want to invite people in to have an opinion. Yeah. You know, on who I am or how I was born. I mean, being a traveller was hard enough. I didn't want to openly invite people into my life to then scrutinise the other parts of my core identity, if you know what I mean. And it was only that when I was organising a comedy event for Galway Pride in 2016, and as I was promoting it on my social media pages, a traveller mother contacted me one night and she was saying, you know, it's great to see more travellers being okay with who they are and being gay. And I was like, oh, I don't remember ever saying that I was gay, but I suppose you're promoting a gay event. That's the way it is. And she said that she was worried about her daughter. She had a teenage daughter who she knew was gay since she was a child. And the daughter had started to harm herself and she didn't know how to approach the topic. And she said, we need to have more travellers out. And more importantly, we need to have more travellers showing that they're happy when they're out. And it was like, it was after that, and I was like, why haven't I publicly come out? You know, if it's even going to help that one girl, then I might as well. Because I wasn't afraid of coming out. But then the moment when I decided to come out, I was like, oh, hang on a second. You're going to be the talk of the town now. And it became real. You know, it was like, actually, I haven't respected the act of coming out enough. You know, a lot of people would have this fear. And I was thinking, oh God, if I'm feeling anxious about it, you imagine what that child is feeling, you know, that little teenage girl. And like, so yeah, I just bit the bullet and I said, time to do it. And I came out and, well, here I am talking about it on RT Radio.
And we're in Pride Month now, and this all happened around Pride Week or some years back. When you reflect back now, you did it for her, but do you think you did it as much for you as her and your community?
Absolutely. And actually, that's exactly what I said in my speech, the concert hall. While I did come out to try and help her, I ended up helping myself because I didn't know that I needed to liberate myself from my own kind of, not even fears, but anxieties. And, you know, I was quite comfortable living in the land of ambiguity. I think that's what happens. It's like you're kind of resistant to change. Well, things are grand now, I'm living my life, you know. So there's no need to come out. But sometimes you really do, and you don't notice how much you needed to come out until you've done it.
And when you did it, was there acceptance there from your family?
Ah, yeah. I mean, my father was slagging me. I told you the kind of house that I grew up in. I mean, the first thing my father, the only comment he made was when my mother called me up and she said, are you coming out for dinner? I said, yeah, yeah. And he was in the background. He said, is that Rory? Because, of course, he was... because it was a character in Mrs. Brown's Boys who was as cramp as knickers. That's his way of saying, yeah, yeah, that's you.
That's acceptance,
so,
right there.
And, it's a West of Ireland acceptance. It's a bit of slagging, it's a bit of banter.
Anyone a little bit more maybe nostalgic or wise amid the family giving you words of encouragement back then?
I mean, my granny, obviously, yeah, massively so.
Woman in her 80s.
She was devoutly Catholic. This is a woman who went to Medjugorje, Lourdes, Knock, the whole shebang, you know, coming back with 14 litres of holy water for us pagans. You know. And I remember seeing her, well, called up to her one day, and we had the conversation, and, you know, I said, you know, Granny, I'm gay. And she's like, her words were, you know, as long as you love yourself as much as you love the other person, because it doesn't matter, God is going to love you anyway. I just thought that was such a beautiful thing coming from a devout Catholic traveller woman, a woman who would have had hardship and would have been extremely traditional back in the day, I suppose, to have such a progressive and loving mindset. I mean, yeah, if a woman of that age and era can be like that, I can't see why there's still homophobia existing today.
She sounds like a very proud granny, and I'm sure a very proud Galway woman like you. Galway, as we now know already, since we started talking in summer, you absolutely love Galway. And adore. And specifically, tune The Saw Doctors. Talk to me about your next song choice, N17.
So my next song is N17 by The Saw Doctors, and this brings me back to my first comedy gigs in Cuba Comedy Club in Galway City, just off Air Square. And I thought only was the best. You know, I thought I was a superstar. I even had a walk-on tune. And the walk-on tune was the N17 song by the Saw Doctors. And of course, again, great, great, great song from Tune. And I would know Leo and Davey. And Pierce. So yeah, again, it's all tune oriented and it's telling stories, and it's, yeah, it's amazing.
Let's take a listen. N17 by The Saw Doctors. And that's The Saw Doctors with N17, the fourth musical choice of Martin Bean's Ward. You were talking there about, you know, that moment where you're walking on stage and you've got your team tune and you think you're a big deal. Like, does it
Plot twist. I wasn't. I'm still not.
Yeah, so what does it take? Like, is it just having to believe? Is it just boosting yourself with inner confidence? What is it that helps you get on there and perform?
I suppose equal parts confidence and delusion. I mean, that's, do you know, the confidence to get up there and staying delusional just to get through the bit, thinking that you're doing well. No, I suppose I'm being pretty hard on myself. I had a couple of them where I died on my arse, so to speak, and that was a great training. And it taught me to dip into the crowd and actually improvise on the spot when some of your material isn't working. Jump into the crowd and improvise. And I actually found that I was a better improv comedian than I was a scripted comedian. And when I eventually came about to do my first comedy tour, which was called The Gomi Fiend, it was a different comedy show in each venue, and it was totally ad-lib and improv. And it was based on who was in the audience and having those conversations with the audience. And that was between an hour and a half and 2 hours. I mean, it was 2 hours of pure ad-lib and improv in the Ballina Arts Centre. You know, 200 people. And I was just going around to them all and a big, massive standing ovation at the end of it. So, like, dying on the ass is good, I suppose, because it just prepares you and it gets you sharp.
And so you're able to kind of convert the nervousness, the anxiety into just being in the moment and being a good reader of people.
I would still, to this day, I would get anxiety before a show. And of course, it's anticipatory anxiety in that that anxiety ceases to exist the moment you do the thing that you're anxious about doing. So if I'm anxious about performing comedy, I'm going to be rattled right up until the moment that I pick up the microphone and speak to the crowd. And then it goes, because then it goes into fight mode and the adrenaline kicks in and you enjoy it. And you become sharper and you become in the moment with the audience. Now, not that's saying that I've done gigs in the past where I've upset people, that, you know, but that's kind of part and parcel, you know, and you learn from that and then you apologise afterwards and then you're all friends. And then moving on to theatre, that is totally scripted. But then, you know, I did a show here in Galway with the Dead House and somebody's phone went off and I was in the most difficult part of the play as well. It was such a heavy moment in the play and I had to finish that, and then when I proceeded into the next scene, then I addressed the phone going off and I ad-libbed a new line into it, you know, and now I'm going into the house because apparently someone's phone is ringing, maybe it's my grandfather, and then I just moved on and the audience actually gave a standing ovation for that because they recognised that it wasn't an ideal situation in a very heavy moment for a phone to start ringing. But they really, really appreciated being able to bounce back and improv on that.
You're a comedian, a playwright, a presenter, a journalist. What's next?
I suppose I want to do... I'm writing a short film at the moment, but I want to write and direct film. And I have so many good ideas also for just, you know, documentaries. Like, I really want to delve into so many different things. And I suppose it's just to see what the universe holds for me. And maybe those opportunities will come my way and maybe some of them won't, but I'm going to have fun trying at least. But I think one of the main things that I want to do is I want to start cataloguing, you know, more voices from our elders. And I don't mean traveller elders. I recently completed a project on that with 10 different videos for the National Museum of Ireland, cataloguing 10 different traveller elders. And it sparked an interest, a further interest, I suppose, in me, that where are the stories, you know, from our Irish people from north, you know, Dublin or the inner city Dublin or the farming community or the Gaelgors of Connemara or the Islanders? Where's the oral history stories from that? Because we're losing that generation of people who remember what it's like, you know, not to be part of the European Common Market or, you know, not to be part of the European Union or, you know, people who remember what it's like before the roads were all developed. We're losing those voices. And yeah, some of them have the stories written. But I think it's up to the government now. I think the government really need to start putting, you know, effort into capturing these voices before they're all gone. I think once a person hits retirement age, a sound recorder needs to be sent out, and they need to be given the opportunity to record some of their stories or just to leave something for the next generation.
So the thread line in that idea and everything you've done to date is storytelling, and you've picked your final choice, you believe is really emblematic of the future of storytelling. Give us a little preview of Dara O'Dea.
So Dara is another Tuam native, and I suppose I could be accused of being a bit biased because he's from Tuam, but again, I'm drawn to the storyteller that can intermingle a story within fantastic music and a voice and can carry the story through. And I just think that Dara is of the next generation of people to do storytelling through song. And I mean, he's a phenomenal artist anyway. But I think that anyone listening to his music, it's quite catchy too. It's just so, so good. And sometimes I feel like a bit of a fraud that I get so much of a platform, and then I look at these musicians or these actors or people who are just trying to get the same amount of a platform with actual talent, and I just feel so useless, you know, so...
Nothing you have told us about today bears that out. Martin Beans Ward, thanks so much for sharing your musical memories with us this morning. We're going to play out now with Guerrilla Warfare in Your Back Garden by Dara O'Dea.